This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment. You've caught the vision. You want to serve God in every aspect of your family life, but sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. How do you get from principle to practice? What does it look like when you get there? How do you apply scriptural truth in a 21st century family? This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
All right, well, hello and greetings. This is Hal Young.
And Melanie.
I want to welcome you to the program. We're going to be talking this evening about the upcoming season, the gift-giving time.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about how to make gift-giving something so great about.
Yeah.
And we have lots of ideas for saving money and for giving gifts that make a difference to people, that make a difference to their souls and to what they become.
Absolutely, yes. Well, we are here dedicated to helping you make biblical family life practical in your family. And so we always like to look at what's the biblical pattern here. And, you know, gift giving and celebration of holidays is a biblical thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think people get upset because people get so materialistic during this season.
Right.
You know, like the craziness we saw over Black Friday with people attacking each other in the stores. You know, people getting injured and killed over things.
Yeah, you know, somebody made an observation this week that it's funny that on Thursday we gather around the table and reflect on how thankful we are for what God's given us, and then we get up early on Friday and we go beat each other over the head for flat-screen TVs.
Yeah,
you know,
really.
That's really stupid.
Yeah, it is stupid. And, you know, we have friends that have reacted by getting rid of Christmas, by not celebrating Christmas or at least not giving gifts.
Yeah.
And, you know, that makes me sad because I think there's good biblical reasons for giving gifts.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, there are. And there's lots of examples in Scripture of giving gifts to celebrate a wedding, to celebrate a birthday, to celebrate other holidays. And, of course, we have the example of the three kings.
Yeah, you know, when Christ was born, they came. And you know, we say that we know that they gave him at least three gifts. We don't know those are only gifts, but it does mention gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
And for that matter, we don't know that there were just three either. There were three gifts mentioned.
Right.
And so that's a tradition that we've all accepted. But
they did give gifts to celebrate the birth of the Messiah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's been a tradition in Christian society ever since.
Sure.
You know, to celebrate those things of God by giving each other gifts. You know, originally, in fact, people gave gifts on Old Christmas.
Yes.
You know, on January 6th, which was, it's the feast day of, it's the Epiphany.
Right.
Which is when we celebrate the three wise men coming to see the Savior.
Right.
And that's when people originally gave gifts to each other.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? That we're reenacting in some extent that passage of gifts there to recognize the birth of our King. And you know, we've done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we'll talk about that as we go into the program here.
We'll talk about that a little later. You know, one thing that I like to remember is, you know, really through the gift of the Messiah, the Lord gave us the greatest possible gift, the gift of reconciliation to himself.
Yes.
You know, that because the Messiah came, Jesus came, he lived a sinless life, he died for our sins.
That's right.
That we can be reconciled to God.
That's right, because it's by grace that we're saved through faith, and that is not of ourselves. It is a gift of God, and it's not a result of our works, lest any of us should boast about it.
And see, so I think it's especially awesome to give each other gifts to celebrate the coming of the Messiah because of that.
Completely undeserved, unsolicited, you know, that we receive gifts, and we give gifts to one another simply because we love each other.
Yeah, and there's great joy in that, in studying somebody's needs and desires, and striving to meet them, to give them something that they love and enjoy like that out of unmerited favor just because you love them.
Well, and that is the nature of real love, isn't it? That we look to other people's desires and needs and pleasures and joys, and we place their needs ahead of our own for that, you know, for that time.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, I think that Charles Dickens has said, you know, wouldn't it be great if we lived that spirit of Christmas all the time, you know, every day,
right.
But at least let's do it now. Let's do it in this season. And so we're going to talk about that some. We want to talk about, you know, how do we live this out? I mean, it's a great tradition, even if you're not a believer. and it's a cultural thing. And so how can we reclaim this for Christ, and how can we enjoy it and celebrate the season
without that materialistic culture, you know, mm-hmm. without the knocking each other on the head for flat screen TVs or trampling people for a toaster?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can we have the gift giving and not have the materialism?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can be right in your face about it. Did you see the video that was going around of the Santa Claus with a megaphone
that
was
on
Thanksgiving evening? He was berating people who were standing in line at the big box retailers, and I won't mention them because we like some of them, but people standing in line because they had the early sales had stopped the midnight season and had backed into Thanksgiving proper, and people standing in line to go get their big screen TVs and their game consoles and the rest of it. And so here's a Santa Claus driving up and down the lines with a megaphone saying, "You are a bane on civilization. You are dishonoring Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. How's your credit card debt like?"
That was funny.
It was kind of funny. And I sort of agree with the thought behind it.
Yeah,
you know,
it really made me angry.
Can we not fence this off and say, for goodness sakes, let's keep one holiday celebrated for the reason it was begun?
Well, and I think what was so upsetting to me is that, you know, people may make the choice to shop, but those workers didn't make the choice to be there.
No, a lot of them don't.
You know, and they have to be there long before the customers get there to prepare. And, you know, anyway. Lots of our friends have tried to get a hold of this and get rid of materialism in Christmas over the years. They've tried some different things. Let's talk about those and some of the different things that people have done.
Well, I think we mentioned this. It wasn't last week. I believe it was the week before. We talked about, you know, celebrating the holidays, even when you have family members that, you know, you may have to make the command performance kind of thing. We always show up at this relative's house for the holidays.
Right.
How can I reclaim it when I don't even host it anymore? And we made that observation. Well, you know, if you always have to go to the big family reunion on Christmas, then celebrate Christmas on the old day. And we've done that.
Mm-hmm.
Back when we lived a long way from our family, and, you know, that was a good time for us to go back and see people, but we still wanted to have our own family's traditions. We would celebrate, actually, in early January at the Feast of the Kings, and, you know, that was a good time to celebrate and then make it our own, you know, Christ-centered holiday. And, you know, side benefit was you caught all of the New Year's sales and after Christmas sales. So back in the time when we didn't have much money to spend on each other, that did stretch the dollars a little bit, didn't it?
Well, it does. And, you know, it does, too, keep some of the distraction away from you know, the celebration of Christ's birth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what a lot of families we know have done is limit the giving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, we had one set of friends that that gave each other three gifts at Christmas. They said,
mm-hmm.
you know, if the Lord Jesus only received three gifts, then why should we expect more than that?
Well, okay, that's it. And so, yeah, so we've heard of some that said, okay, for each child or each family member, we'll give you one piece of clothing and one book and then a toy, because, you know, even us grown-ups have our playthings too.
Yeah.
And just those three, right? Or you know, something that my extended family did, because my extended family was pretty large, to try to manage it as all of the cousins started to congregate, they would draw names. And so this family would buy for another specific family, so you didn't have to come in and budget to pay for your own children's gifts and also the gifts of all of the aunts and uncles' kids. And so and that worked well with extended family. You know, we've never done that, even though we have a lot of kids in our own household. We, you know, we haven't tried to do that.
Oh, there'd be a riot. I think our children enjoy giving presents too much to limit it like that.
Yeah,
I think there'd be a riot. Now, you know, among extended family, though, I think it works pretty well. I know I like doing it because it forced me to go to think about that person, to learn more about that person, even if it might be somebody we weren't really close to, to find out enough about them that we were able to buy something for them. So I think it's a good option. I don't know that I would like it in our immediate family.
One option
that's different than that is getting family gifts. Like, you know, we've done that some with our siblings, is give a gift to your sister's family, give a gift to my brother's family, and that works pretty well.
And another thing we discovered is that you can kind of pool some of the gifts within your own home to say, all right, we're going to buy a gift that's appropriate for the two or three older children to share,
yeah.
You know, and maybe get a larger gift that would be, hey, this is a family gift. You know, this is a set of family books or a particular, you know, a game or a piece of some kind of gear that they all would share and enjoy together. And that's another thing you can do that while you're still giving gifts and maybe giving some substantial gifts, it encourages people to build relationships using them, not to squirrel them away.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And yeah, that can put ease in things, too, when you're – like we talked last week about opening gifts one at a time around in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
If you have family gifts, and the person who runs out of gifts with their name on it to open can open the family gifts for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can limit what's spent. You know, we spend a lot less per child than we used to.
Right.
You know, when we had more money. And I know, I don't think it has decreased our pleasure or the children's pleasure at all.
No.
Because really, I remember our oldest back during those days, just getting completely overwhelmed by all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they appreciate it more when there's not quite as much stuff.
Yeah, and that's, I definitely agree on that. Well, you know, there's some other things people have done. I have known people who, instead of exchanging gifts with one another, would go shop for a needy family. You know, they would buy gifts for the names on the angel tree, or they would, you know, do something to turn their charitable and, you know, their giving impulse, turn it to those who really don't have resources to share with one another.
And that could be a real blessing, especially for families that have abundance and they're having to search for things to give each other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why not give it to somebody who doesn't have abundance?
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the biggest things that we can do to get rid of the materialistic focus of Christmas is to work toward changing our and our children's expectations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because as we teach ourselves and our children to rejoice in thoughtful and unusual and outside-the-box gifts and not to be looking at the latest thing advertised, which might not even suit them, but they think they've got to have it because everybody does, to welcome things that aren't new but maybe precious in a different way.
Yeah.
I think when you change those expectations, it opens up gift-giving tremendously and gives you a lot more options.
Well, it certainly does. Well, look, it looks like we're running up out on time to take a short break here.
Station break, folks. This is just a minute. Hang on, and we'll be right back with you with some great practical gift ideas about and even what you can do when you have almost no money.
Okay, so we'll be right back. Hang on there. Thanks for joining us.
It's not always easy having sons. Teenage boys put away a startling amount of groceries. Younger boys can be downright destructive. They're noisy, unconcerned with hygiene, and the dog has a longer attention span, or so it seems some days. If these are God's chosen gifts to us, and we believe that they are, then why does it seem so hard? How can we prepare these boys to serve God when we can barely make it through the day? Isn't there a better way? The answer is yes. Raising Real Men, Surviving, Teaching, and Appreciating Boys by Hal and Melanie Young is a practical, award-winning guide to equipping the hearts and minds of boys without breaking or losing your own. John Rosemond says, "This is just what the doctor ordered for parents who want to raise capable Christian men of character." Raising Real Men by Hal and Melanie Young. Visit it on the web at raisingrealmen.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
Hello, welcome back to Making Biblical Family Life Practical. I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
And we are talking today about gift giving with a purpose and with practical Christ-honoring ideas in mind at all times.
So we're going to talk about practical gift ideas.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best, and I wish I knew who gave us this idea because, boy, it has blessed all of us.
Yeah.
One thing that you can give is give memories.
Okay.
Do you remember, I think it was when our oldest was less than a year old.
Yeah.
Somebody told us that they give the grandparents every year as their main gift a photo album of that year.
I've never heard a grandparent say, "Please, that's too many pictures of my grandkids. I've got enough, thank you." I've never heard that.
No, I haven't either.
And especially back at the time we started doing it when everything was printed, there wasn't digital photography, and so you had to, you know, go to the drugstore or Walmart or whatever and get those things, those negatives printed out. I mean, those pictures were really precious. Well, they're still precious now, but I know the past few years we've converted over from the printed, the traditional photo albums with the printed pictures. We've gone to a digital album, which we then get printed and bound.
Yeah, get printed in a regular book.
And those are not that expensive.
We've done the whole. I've done scrapbooks. We did everything. Now we have a book made, and it's cheaper than probably other things we would have given them, but it's infinitely more precious.
Yeah.
Because what we do is we make one for each of the grandmothers. Well, we also make them for great grandparents or family that lives far away, and we make one for ourselves too.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not sure I would have ever put all those pictures and albums and organize them like that if I'd have ever gotten around to it for us, if I hadn't done it for them. And those things have been precious to us.
Well, it does, because you know what? You've organized them and you've preserved them and you've made them more permanent in some way, because honestly, everybody has that problem, especially as your family ages. You know, when you've just got the one little baby at home and you've got more time, you may not think it, but you've got more time to do those kind of projects. But when you've got older kids and more kids and other things going on, a lot of times those things get put in a box and they don't happen. So doing this kind of thing as part of your Christmas is a blessing to you as well as to your gift receivers.
Well, it is. And, you know, there's always great excitement. I always make that one of the last gifts I give when we gather to open presents, because I know that's going to be a showstopper.
Yeah.
You know, everyone is so excited to see it and relive what God has done in our lives during that year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the best ideas we ever got.
Yeah.
But you could do other things that are giving people memories. Like, you could give your family or give your family, one of the family members, a trip.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it could be anything, whatever is appropriate and affordable. I mean, if your budget allows you to take a cruise to the Caribbean, fine. If your budget is, let's all pack the family up and go over to the State History Museum next weekend, that's fine.
Yeah,
it's just an event. You're going to give you're giving some of your time to create an experience and a memory.
But you want them to have something to open.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's really cool is you can go print out pictures of where you're going, or make plans, or buy, order some kind of souvenir, and have something to wrap up so that they can open it and say, "What is this?" And you can talk about, you know, we're going to take a day trip to this national park that's not too far from us, and we're going to take a picnic, and we're going to do some fun things together.
Mm-hmm.
But you can give that gift of building memories together.
Yeah, those are neat. Well, I remember when I was growing up, you know, I was a typical child. We used to get the Sears Roebuck catalog, and I would go through and just, you know, hunger for all the glitzy stuff that was in there. But my grandparents, I remember, were of an older generation and a wiser generation. They grew up in the Depression, and they knew the value of one or two really treasured things. And so rather than getting the most trendiest toy in the catalog, they would give things that promoted creativity, promoted constructive play, you know, and it could have been anything like art supplies or a construction kit.
Well, we're going to talk about some of these. We'll talk specifically about imaginative play because, you know, costumes, I think, is one of the best things you can give small children.
Our kids have loved those.
You know, it's fantastic. They love to dress up like knights or soldiers or ranch hands or explorers or pioneers. And you can do that at any level of complexity. You can order these fancy medieval costumes that cost a couple of $100s, or you can order the cheapo ones from Oriole Trading Company that are meant for Halloween, but, you know, hey, an Egyptian costume is an Egyptian costume.
Right.
And those historical costumes particularly are great.
You know, you've got a really good resource book. And years ago, we picked up a book of simple directions to make theater costumes. You remember that, stage costumes? And so it was saying, how do you make, you know, how can you quickly and easily fabricate an elaborate-looking gown for a medieval princess, or a proper ranch hands outfit from the 1800s. You know, how can you do it easily and quickly? Because, you know, stage managers and costume producers, they don't all have Hollywood budgets to work with, so they're trying to make it look right, but do it with, you know, Goodwill old used clothing or, you know, bits of cast off cloth or whatever it was. And that was an interesting resource. And something like that could be, you know, an idea machine for you. It could be a project in itself.
You know, another good idea is you can give items that will double as practical items that they can also use in dressing up.
Mm-hmm.
Things like a Western-style winter coat.
Yeah.
Or a cowboy hat.
Uh-huh.
That they can wear in the winter.
Yeah.
Or cowboy boots that they can wear to church in place of dress shoes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we've done that. But don't forget Army Surplus Stores.
Man, that is, oh gosh, it's like a toy store for all ages of males. Yeah. And, you know, at one time, there was lots and lots of those things around because it was right after the war. But you know what? They're still there. You can still find them, and they sell everything from, you know, brand new camping equipment to old BDUs and battle fatigues and helmets. I think some of those are still probably Second World War surplus, to be honest. And, boy, our guys love to go there.
And it's very inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great way to get dream stuff for little boys.
Mm-hmm.
Pup tents,
yep.
Shovels, canteens.
Mm-hmm.
Boy,
mm-hmm.
Love that kind of stuff.
Yes, they do.
You know, along with the idea of imaginative play, I think mm-hmm. building sets are great.
Okay, yeah. And, of course, we all know Legos are a big one. Can you still get Fisher Technics? I know that for a time they were not available, but I've heard they're back. If you haven't seen that's a construction set that was actually built as a tool for engineers to simulate manufacturing equipment. Excuse me. And so it's more elaborate than the Legos. But my understanding was that some of those German engineers were taking boxes of parts home and playing with their kids with them. And Fisher said, hey, you know, we could package this as a toy as well as a technical tool. And so, yeah, those are pretty neat. I remember we used to get those from.
Step up from Legos.
Yeah.
But sometimes, mm-hmm. though, you need to, like Legos particularly, they've made hay while Sunshine's trying to get licensed character sets, and some of them just have inappropriate pieces,
mm-hmm.
You know, things that might be too scary for your children.
Yeah.
Feel free to carefully open a box and chuck out the piece you want. You know, feel free to reimagine it. You know, I remember we got one that, when our children were little,
yeah.
that was made for Indiana Jones. I didn't want them looking into Indiana Jones when they were that age because it was too scary for them at that age.
Right.
Well, so I took mm-hmm. my markers and I changed the front of the box
mm-hmm.
and turned it into a paleontology expedition.
Because after all, Indiana Jones is an archaeologist, right?
Right.
So there's still lots of them. Yeah, yeah. Because actually, you don't want your kids just reenacting the movies or inserting themselves into cartoons. You want them to create their own worlds and to exercise their own imagination.
You know, one advantage of building sets of all kinds is that it's something you can add on to over the years.
Uh-huh.
And that makes it really easy for grandparents to buy kids an appropriate present.
Mm-hmm.
I think about blocks. Now, we have a set of blocks that we've had in our house for 20 years.
Some of those maple blocks?
Yeah, the hardwood, the architectural blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a set of them. They have, like, arches and
mm-hmm.
cones and ramps and columns. So you can build a lot more complex buildings than just you can with the little alphabet kind of blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And our children play with those for a very long time.
Yeah.
And you can get those on our site, too, by the way. We've got a several nice sets of those on our site.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them about the model railroading and model kits and supplies.
You know, that's a neat thing, too. That's something that actually one of my sons and I are getting back into. Once upon a time, it was a common thing. Every boy at some time in his childhood got an electric train set. But, you know, that can be a one-season toy, or it can be the start of a long-time hobby. You know, it's like the difference between toy airplanes and scale model airplanes. You see things that, you know, you start to build more toward the highly detailed and you know, encouraged to look into to research the history of the aircraft or trains and railroads. And, you know, I know I was engaged in the hobby a lot when I was younger, and I learned so much about American history and geography and some basic ideas about civil engineering and, you know, all of those kind of things just because I was interested and I dug that out. Nobody had to, you know, beg me to do this as a school project. It was just something I did. Well, you know, you can introduce your kids into all kinds of hobbies like that.
Well, and things that they can do, that they can build skills, that they can learn, that they can do, are great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I bought one of our daughters is really artistically talented,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I bought her that DVD set recently, Hal.
Yeah.
And then your mom went and got her all the supplies she needed. It was like real art supplies that I wouldn't have had known even what to look for.
Yeah.
But she went and got her all of them so that she'd have them there and she could do those art lessons.
Well, see, and that's a good thing. You know, our last episode we were talking about the Grandparents of Homeschoolers ministry with Barb and Rich Heckey as the leaders, and also the backs that we talked to with Gail and Michael. And that's one of the things that they've encouraged is for grandparents to look into hobbies and interests they can share. One of the things I've seen in some of the conferences, they've had some really good basic art supply kits, you know, that you can say, hey, let's learn how to do pastel drawings, kids. You know, let's all get together and learn how to do watercolors. And so that's something that, you know, it could be shared with grandparents, it could be shared with the parents, or just as an individual hobby for the child.
You know, let's not forget the active stuff.
Oh, no.
You know, ask yourself, do your children have a basketball, a soccer ball, a softball and bat?
Mm-hmm.
You know, make sure they've got the basic sports equipment for pickup games, you know, with among your family. We have enough people to play just our family, but even if the neighbors don't show up.
Right.
But, you know, trampolines and bikes and scooters, kids today don't get out enough.
No,
they don't do outside stuff enough.
That's quite true.
And anything that encourages them to get out of the house and off the couch and outside is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry.
What about useful stuff?
Useful, yes. You know what?
I don't mean underwear.
Well, underwear, okay. Underwear is a good thing.
But it's not appropriate for Christmas,
It's not, the kids don't value
it. Not even if it's red.
Whoever does the laundry doesn't appreciate that.
Yeah.
Anyway, useful things like, for example, tools. You know what? I know every boy loves to get tools, and there's all kinds of toy toolkits out there. But you know what? For not much more, especially now, this time of year, you can get actual useful adult tools, even in small sizes. It's like I was in one of the home improvement stores this past week, and all up and down the aisles, in the center of the aisle, they've got temporary displays out with, like, socket wrench sets. And they're very inexpensive. These are not the, you know, professional mechanic grades, but they're serviceable. And you can get a socket wrench set or sets of pliers and screwdrivers and carpenter's tools and things at just crazy low prices. And you know what? You get a decent toolbox for $15 and fill it up with good smaller size tools that your young guys can get their hands around, and they will go to town. They will love it.
Yeah, give them some scrap lumber and set them loose.
Yeah.
Yeah, boys love that kind of stuff. And you know, play should be practice for adulthood.
Yeah.
And to give a boy tools and to teach him how to use them, that's a cool thing. You can give girls tools too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a set when I went off to live in an apartment with of a hammer and some basic tools and things, and it came in very handy.
Yeah.
But also, our daughter loves when people give her cooking tools.
Yeah.
You know, she has an interest in, she wants to be like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so she loves cookie cutters and, you know, fancy rolling pins and fancy aprons and things. And
that's the kind of neat thing is that if you just go ahead and you make a little bit more investment into an actual usable tool, not the toy substitute, then the child can be learning the actual skills and not just be pretending, not just be playing with something that, you know, doesn't actually do what it pretends to do, but actually go out and do it, you know, cut some boards, cook some muffins, you know, do the real thing, and that can grow into really doing the real thing and benefit the family.
You know, a few years ago, one of our older boys bought our daughter, he asked me, you know, he wanted to buy something for cooking, and he said, I'd really like to buy her this little mini muffin maker.
Yes.
And I thought, well, you know, most of her friends are getting like easy bake oven kind of things, but why not get something that really cooks?
Uh-huh.
And yes, she needs a little supervision. She needs some help with it.
Yeah.
But she does fine.
Yeah.
You know, a couple more things about that. Do you remember Matt was coming up with ideas of things he wanted? And he said, why don't you tell one of my siblings to find me public domain classical music and print it out for me because I can't afford to go buy music right now.
So he wanted some sheet music to play to practice piano with,
right.
And thought that that's a low cost gift, it requires a little bit of time. But then, you know, really, that's we're giving of each other. You know,
yeah.
We're giving of ourselves when we do that, when we invest the time into
it. Well, I think it's important to remember that children, and particularly those in the 9 to 13 age bracket,
mm-hmm.
really want to become men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And if we give them toys that let them, that aren't really toys,
yeah.
that let them do real things,
mm-hmm.
I think they love it.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, we need to take a short break here.
Okay.
And so why don't we take a quick break, and when we come back, we have some more ideas about good and practical and affordable gifts for your family, okay? So we'll be back in just a moment. Join us in 60 seconds.
Jerah was a slave in Egypt. It was a dangerous place to be. The work was exhausting, and her family was torn between the gods of the Egyptians and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And her brother, would his Ada be given in marriage to an Egyptian in the palace? Would they ever be free? Adventure, excitement, love, and faith come together when Jerah and her family find themselves at the culmination of 400 years of history in A Cry from Egypt, the historical novel by Hope Auer. Selected by David Quine's Cornerstone Curriculum and the Tapestry of Grace program. Endorsed by Rob Shearer of the Schaefer Study Center. Order your copy from the website, acryfromegypt.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
Hi, welcome back to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with
Al
and Melanie Young.
Yep. And we have been talking about gift giving and trying to get past just the materialism and the acquisition mode that everybody gets into, but rather to say, let's have some meaningful gifts, not just abandon the whole tradition, but let's reclaim it and let's make it purposeful.
You know, I think we ought to look at giving our children and each other
mm-hmm.
adventurous gifts.
Adventurous things, like what?
Well, like how about ballistic gifts?
Everybody
asks us, no matter where we go.
Yes.
Should boys really be allowed to play with toy guns?
Should they be? You know what? We had to really kind of think about that because when our youngest, well, when our oldest, rather, was just a little tiny guy, we lived out on the West Coast in a very liberal community. And they didn't grow up with the Southern tradition of having guns in the family. I'm not saying we left them lying around the house because we didn't. But, you know, we had them and people did go out and hunt and such. They didn't do that out there, and people
yeah.
were very queasy about the children playing with toy guns. But then, you know, we looked at Scripture and realized that there is a place for the use of weapons, whether they are swords or spears or bows and arrows or, you know, the modern
well,
weapons.
Well, there's godly aggression. There's aggression that
mm-hmm.
protects
mm-hmm.
and provides,
mm-hmm.
that hunts and supports, and that fulfills the office that God's given the government, to bear the sword for the punishment of evildoers.
That's exactly right. And so if it's true, then, that a Christian may reasonably wield a weapon, carry a weapon in the line of duty, whatever it may be, if that is open to Christians, then it makes sense to us that our young people should be allowed in their role-playing, in their, you know, pretending and imagining their future, to bring some of that in. So we don't have a problem with our boys playing with toy guns.
No, we do not allow them to shoot at each other.
No.
No nastiness or ugliness, and they're not allowed to play anything that would be sinful if they did in reality.
No, the Scripture says the
yeah.
fool makes a mockery of sin, or that sin is like sport to a fool. You know, we don't need to practice sin because we get enough of that on our
We're
own.
We're good enough at
we
that.
We don't have to go out and set out to do it. So,
yeah, especially
so,
our kids.
So we don't allow in our family for anybody to entertain themselves by pretending to sin, and that's at any age.
That's right. But you know what? They can do lots of other things.
Like,
they can pretend to be pioneers.
They can pretend to be hunting to supply for their family.
Soldiers protecting the country.
They can be law enforcement.
Policemen. Secret
be,
service hunting down counterfeiters.
Right. There's all kinds of things. Even privateers, yeah, because you know what? We don't do the pirate thing. But you could be privateers because they got a letter of mark and reprisal from the king or the government, which authorized them to raid an active enemy's shipping. And so
yep.
that was not – now, they considered them pirates, but that doesn't count. Okay, privateers, historically speaking, are not pirates.
Now, you know, our guys have toy swords and bows and arrows and slingshots. And you need a little training with those. They have to know what they can and can't do.
Well, that's true, because you know what? A slingshot is, yes, can be weaponized. I mean,
Goliath would tell you that.
Yeah, Goliath would tell you that. You can hunt with a slingshot. And, of course, a bow and arrow is really and truly a weapon.
Yeah, and a pine cone hurled by a three-man slingshot can really give you a good whack.
Oh, but man, I tell you what, we got one of those, and we don't get much snow here, but the year that we got the three-man slingshot, we had a good wet snowfall not long after. Golly, we could throw that snowball 150 yards.
Ew.
That was terrific. It was fantastic. So,
And as our boys move into the teen years, it may be appropriate to give them real weapons.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah, they've got to be taught to use them rightfully, take hunter safety classes or 4-H classes.
We've got a young man in our family who's about to have his hunter safety course, and actually in about a week.
Yep.
We were out this past weekend, you know, teaching him how to properly handle a shotgun and, you know, to use it safely, to load and unload it, and, you know, the rules about being around other people with guns if you're going to be hunting or target shooting.
Yeah, please don't keep unsecured loaded weapons around little children. That's just not safe.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
We don't do that.
Don't forget ballistic rockets, though.
Oh, like what?
Like, our guys love model rockets. What boy wouldn't like something that goes boom and flies away?
That's true. But, you know, not just the kind of explosives, but we've had some really neat rockets that were used pressurized water. Remember
those?
Oh,
yeah.
Or some that use
vinegar
air
baking
pressure.
Soda.
Vinegar and baking soda. Yeah,
air pressure.
All kinds of different things like that.
But, you know, adventures can come in other guises, too.
Okay.
Like books.
All right.
You know, books and CDs, I think,
mm-hmm.
are a great way to encourage our children to travel all over the world and all through history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've given books and things like that for many, many years for our children. And especially when you find an author you love,
mm-hmm.
that makes it easy.
Because
mm-hmm. wherever you find it over the years, you can capture it.
Yeah.
But, you know, our guys, I think many, many boys really love audiobooks.
Yeah.
Now, see, the thing I like about audiobooks.
Yes.
I love to read.
Right.
But that's a kind of solitary adventure.
Yeah.
Now, you and I pass books back and forth. And
we do that. Sometimes we read aloud.
But an audiobook allows everybody in the family to share that adventure.
And you can enjoy those. You can sit down and listen to them just like an old-time radio show, or you can use that time to fold laundry or do quiet housework or something and still enjoy yourself with the entertaining thing and learn a lot. I know that the stories by G.A. Henty have so much history in them. You know, you learn so much geography listening to those historical novels that they're like, you know, you don't be able to give credit for that.
Well, that's how one of our children made it to the state level of National Geographic B.
Right.
They asked him a question in one of the final rounds. I had no clue.
Yeah.
And so I was sure he was going to answer it wrong because I know a lot about geography.
Mm-hmm.
But he answered it right. And I nearly fainted. And later I said, how'd you learn that? He said, well, you know that Henny you made me put up because I was reading it during school time last week?
Yeah.
It happened on that plane.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
I'm sure that.
But, you know, one thing I really like about audiobooks, especially when guys are struggling with reading
mm-hmm.
or they don't love reading, is it takes some of the pain, some of the work out of reading, and yet gives them complex language so that they really learn reading comprehension.
Mm-hmm.
So that when their ability to decode catches up, they can just
They know how the language works. They've got some vocabulary.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a real benefit, and we've seen that even in our own family.
And we have several great audiobooks on our site, too, folks, if you're interested in looking at those. Pollyanna is brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Our fourth Hero Tales is just being released this week.
Yay.
And we have the J. Henny audiobooks. There's lots of great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Games, too, are a cool thing that we enjoy giving in this family.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many good classic games there. You know, just of course, there's things like checkers and chess and, you know, the very old, the ancient games. But then there's games like Pit. Okay, Pit was invented and published back in the late 1800s. Theodore Roosevelt loved it and played it in the White House. Okay, and you know, if you've never played that, it's a card game. Basically,
it's based on Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
You're trying to trade on different commodities in the mercantile.
Now, it sounds complex, but it's not. It mostly involves lots of shouting.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is not a quiet game.
Even little kids can play it. It's a blast.
But
yeah, I guess I want to play harder games like Millborns and Clue, too.
Those are good.
And that works when you have a large family by teaming up an older kid and a younger kid.
Right. And you know, you can use that for all of those games, even games like Risk or Monopoly or games, you know, that involve a good bit of strategy and concentration to play them well. Well, you can take one of your older children and team them up with one of the younger children who really, their main purpose in life, they want to throw the dice. They
want
to move the little man around the board, you know. And so you can let the older one do all the strategy and let the younger one do the fun stuff. And that way they can both enjoy it and have a lot of, they have fun, some bonding time. And it's not a matter of, well, it's time to line up and play another board game where my older brother wins everything as usual.
Yeah, that has really helped things out in our house.
That really revolutionized things for
me.
That trick.
Yeah, you know, and games like catchphrase and things like that that you can play in a crowd are fun when you have other families over.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing, too, you mentioned books. Let me tie this back to something you said earlier about, you know, we train our children's expectations. You don't think about that. And, you know, our children, sometimes our children become materialistic because we encourage them, actually. But rather, we can also take the opportunity to train them to desire or to appreciate things that require a little more mature taste, like a used book.
We're going to be talking about that in the next segment.
Are we then?
But before we get there, let's talk just a minute about video games.
Oh, well, okay, that's a big thing. And you know what? I've got mixed feelings about them. I played some video games as a child, and I know they're all the rage now, and everybody's phone is a video terminal.
And you know what? I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with video games.
Right.
And our guys play them. We played them, but we tend to make it an occasional treat.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the game systems that my brother gives our children, we keep over at Grandma's house.
Yeah.
Because that way, first of all, that draws them to Grandma's house, makes them excited about going to see her, and gives them something to do while they're there. She mainly just wants to watch them.
Yeah, but I think a lot of times they're kind of like chewing gum. I don't think chewing gum is inherently evil, but I don't want my children to have an unending supply and something going in their teeth every moment of the day.
And really it can be worse than that because it can encourage that same dopamine response that we see in some of the worst internet things that they do because they have guys love the violent, exciting games that fill them up with adrenaline.
Yeah.
And
they get all keyed up and nothing to do with it.
And they get cranky and irritable and addicted.
Oh, they can become addicted to it and it becomes,
And, you know, we found, I don't like being around my boys when they're like that.
Yeah.
And our boys who've grown up and left home have seen a lot of kids drop out of college because they were addicted to video games.
I remember that. Well, I tell you what, here's kind of our rule of thumb on the video games. Obviously, control them. You know, don't just let your kids run, you know, play video games as much as they possibly
can. Know
what they're watching. And you know what? Fools make a mockery out of sin. I don't want our children to be foolish. I don't want them to be pretending sin. So we don't let them play video games that encourage them to act out sin.
And also, it's different for different ages.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some things are very appropriate at 18 that aren't appropriate at 13. Some things are never appropriate, like Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yeah.
Never appropriate.
Yeah.
Some things should be maybe okay in a small amount, but not in a large amount. And sometimes you just got to be careful of other things around the play. Like, you know, we found out just the past couple of weeks, I was reading that the PlayStation 4 actually has just had a software upgrade where it can now show people who have the little PlayStation camera playing video games or doing other things, sometimes really shocking, horrible things, in their living rooms.
So some people are using them to act out some really indecent stuff and broadcasting that out.
And little kids are seeing it.
Right.
Now, they get banned when they get caught, but it's too late for the kids that saw it.
Yeah.
So, you know, disable the internet on your game devices.
Yeah.
Because unless you're right there with them, because there's no telling what they're going to see through that.
That is something of a trap.
Yeah.
Well,
okay, well, after the break, we're going to talk about help I'm broke gifts.
Okay.
What do you do when you don't have any money for gifts?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about some great ideas for when you just don't have any money and you're wondering what in the world we're going to do for Christmas.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back in 60 seconds. You're listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical.
You want more. You want it to be better. Not just good, but great. That's what we all want from our marriages. Love, romance, security, respect. We want encouragement and, well, we want happiness. Is there a way to make your marriage even better, to make it holy and happy and a lot more fun? Yes, there is. The new book by Hal and Melanie Young, My Beloved and My Friend, How to Be Married to Your Best Friend Without Changing Spouses. It's a practical, biblical look at what your marriage can and should be, and it gives you working ways to make your mate your best friend without swapping around. Available December 2013 from MyBelovedAndMyFriend.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
Welcome back to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal
and Melanie.
And we are talking about gift giving. And, you know, we're in difficult times, and some people saying, I don't need to hear about gift giving because I got no money to buy anything.
Been there, done that, Hal.
Been there. We have experienced that. We've got 8 kids. We are business owners that did a startup or two, and we know what it's like to be tight on your Christmas budget.
And that crash you just heard coming through the room was our 13-year-old and his dog, who I'm wondering.
Pursued by a Labrador.
Yes, pursued by a Labrador.
So, yes, welcome to real life in our home. Well, you know what? We have worked through that, and you know what? There's some neat things that can happen.
You know, your mother really opened this up for me. Hal's mother is famous for giving what she calls blasts from the past.
Right.
You know, where she gives family heirlooms or memorabilia, things that have been in her attic or on her shelves, and she wraps them and gives them as gifts, and there comes Labrador number 2. I'm sorry, folks.
That's all right.
And she gives them as gifts, and they turn out to be really precious things. Like, do you remember she gave a farm journal that belonged to one of your ancestors to us one year?
From the 1850s.
We had so much fun reading that.
Yeah, and we've gotten things like antique tools or small, you know, pieces of housewares and things like little chests and boxes that my parents had collected over the years.
Yeah, my father has been in heaven for 35 years. And one year my uncle, his big brother, sent me a package of photographs that he'd had copied for me from my dad's childhood.
Right.
And I would have rather had that than a diamond ring.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it cost him, you know, not much to run those through a scanner and put them out for me and send them over.
You know, I've done something kind of similar with our mothers. I do some family history study, and as I was digging up genealogical information, I wrote short articles about certain members of our family tree, you know, some ancestor from back in the late 1800s, and found an old photograph in there. And you know what? All I did was just print this out and put it in a plastic carrier so you could put it in a notebook. But it was something that didn't cost anything. It was just something that I collected along the line of pursuing an interest. You know, there's some other things you can do. You know, we've had pass along special belongings to a deceased relative, like your grandfather's toolbox or a fishing rod.
Or even things from our childhood, like a toy or a book from our childhood, may be very precious to our children if we explain it properly.
Mm-hmm.
Not, I'm just giving you an old book. Mm-hmm. Seth, honey, I need your help, hon.
Yeah, we do.
Not just I'm giving you an old book, but I'm giving you this, and it was precious to me when I was a child. And now you can read it too. And so, you know, those blasts from the past can end up being the most precious gift, and yet it doesn't cost anybody anything except the time and the effort to put it together and wrap it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes used gifts can really pay off. Like, you remember when Sam had a lawn business?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't. Remind me.
Oh, remember he said, I want some equipment because I want to start a lawn business.
Okay.
He went and found him things on Craigslist and FreeCycle and asked friends and asked people in the church and got him quite a lot of equipment that he was thrilled to get, and it cost next to nothing.
Right. You know, one thing that we have found, we've gotten some real finds at like used book sales at libraries, because a lot of times, you know, people donate their old books to libraries, and most of the time, most libraries can't use too much of them, so they'll turn those around and have like big rummage sales of books. sometimes you can find real treasures in those.
Oh, yeah, we found books that were worth $50, $100 in those. And sometimes just if somebody loves a particular author, you can go find them those books, especially if it's a classic author, for just a few dollars on eBay or Amazon's marketplace. That's really easy. Older children can even put together new Lego kits and things like that for the younger siblings and draw them things that they could build with them.
Yeah. Now, we have made a habit of checking out the clearance aisles, especially in the big discount stores, because, you know, they try to order things close to the wire and clear them out so they don't have to warehouse them. So if you shop the after Christmas sales, you can start stocking up for next year, or if you're going to celebrate in January. And
well,
it's a great time to get some things marked way down.
Yeah, and lots of times it's the good stuff that gets marked down, the classic stuff.
Well,
because it's not as sexy as the latest, hottest toy.
Yeah.
You know, we've made costumes and toy aprons and tool aprons and dolly slings out of old clothes,
I remember one year we were struggling financially. I built a miniature version of my workbench.
Oh, that was a huge hit.
You know.
Out of scraps.
Yeah, just out of, just you know, probably not $5 worth of material.
And one year I took some fabric scraps and made an apron for our daughter and made her a dolly sling, and she was thrilled. And, you know, it really didn't take me long at all. It was so small. She was so happy.
Well, you know, one of the things we were talking about, biblical gift giving, you know, that one thing that's mentioned several times in Scripture is sending gifts of food.
Yeah.
You know, sending a portion around to your friends or to the needy or whatever. And we do lots of baking for our own family. It's always good to have some extra we can give to people.
Yeah, and we always give, well, we give your granny's fruitcake to our friends. And, hey, no groaning, folks. Our fruitcake is awesome.
It's different.
It's different than any fruitcake you've ever had.
Yes.
Imagine a fruitcake based on lemon pound cake.
That's what it's like.
It's really yummy.
It's qualitatively distinct. It's really good.
Yeah.
We've got that. Yeah, we got that recipe if you want to.
Yeah, that recipe's in Christ Centered Christmas, our book.
Right.
But, you know, one thing that we've done for your sister every year, sister has two children.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't make sense for them to cook all the different cookies we cook. They'd be eating them by the time Christmas rolled around again the next year.
Right, right.
And so we just give her a big platter and put a few cookies of each of the different things we make, and that way they get to enjoy all the variety.
Yeah, especially since a lot of them are old family recipes.
You know, sometimes you can't do it. I remember one year when you were out of work.
Right.
And we didn't have any money to spend, but my grandmother had given us a little tiny legacy. But we didn't feel right spending that on just stuff that was going to be junk in a year or two.
Right.
And do you remember just like about 3 weeks before Christmas,
a music
store went out of business?
I was driving back from a work location, and I noticed that a big music store, one of the big, you know, instrument stores, was going out of business. And I just stuck my head in there, and they had all of these used band instruments from their rental program. They were all perfectly serviceable. They're in good shape, but they were just used. And they had them marked down to a fourth of what the normal
cost. Or less. And so we were able to take that legacy from Mama Helen and buy things that would last for generations.
That's right. And nearly all of our kids who've reached the proper age have used those instruments.
Yes.
We had a cornet, we had a trombone, we bought a clarinet, you know, because we just got them, you know, it wasn't pennies on the dollar, but it was just dollars on the tens.
Yeah.
You know, got a really good deal just on a clearance basis.
Yeah, and so you never know when the Lord's going to step in, but the time I remember that the most, Hal, was the month that we found out that you had cancer.
That was a tough Christmas. That was really tough because I got the diagnosis that there was something wrong was like right after Thanksgiving.
Oh, it was awful. It was the first week of Christmas.
Yeah.
And the day we found out, you'd been diagnosed with pneumonia, and actually that's how it was found, thank God, for pneumonia.
They found it in the chest x-ray.
But two of our children had surgery that day.
Yeah.
And I was on the way home with those children from the hospital. You were homesick in bed. And I stopped by the doctor's office because I thought our baby was sick and she had a heart condition.
Right.
And he said, well, the baby's okay, but Hal has a tumor the size of his fist in his chest.
Right. And I got my biopsy. I had biopsy surgery like the second week in December, and, you know,
it was just
everything.
Awful. And
we were completely strung out.
Just a few days before Christmas,
Right.
And then a third child had to have surgery. So we have three children recovering from surgery. And I hadn't been able to buy anything that year and stock it up like I usually do because mm-hmm. that was the same year that Katie was born with her heart condition.
Right, and so she was in and out of ICU.
In and out of ICU. So long, you know, it was such a stretch.
Yeah.
And then we find out about this, and I'm just crushed. Every time I burst into tears.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just felt like a huge burden. And then it was just a few days before Christmas, and finally things are stable enough. I say, okay, tonight I am going to go shopping and buy each of our children something for Christmas. I have nothing.
Right.
And our older son who had surgery had a hemorrhage and had to be hospitalized.
Yep.
Got him to the hospital. His big brother came home to spend the night with him because I was strung out at my wit's end with exhaustion.
Right.
With all that was going on. And on the way home, it's 1 in the morning, and I was just weeping. I said, Lord, this is the only time I had to go shopping for the children. What do you want me to do? I can't take this. And I walked in the door, and I was too tired to go sleep. And I was too upset to go sleep,
yeah.
So I went to check email. And it was the strangest email I've ever gotten, I think. It was a family that I did not even know.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you don't know us, and you're probably going to think we're crazy, and I'm really embarrassed to be writing this, but the Lord won't give me any peace. We met your sons playing football, and for some reason, we feel like we're supposed to go Christmas shopping for your family. Please don't think we're weirdos. Well,
yeah.
Then I really did weep.
Uh-huh.
Because that was God's answer. And when I wrote them back and I told them what all had been going on, because, folks, they didn't know.
We hadn't publicized this.
No.
This was just a snowball of stuff that was piling in on us. We hadn't even sent out prayer
because we didn't even know what was going on yet. So we didn't. They didn't know about the surgeries. They didn't know about the hospitalization. They didn't know about house cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I wrote them back and told them, then they started weeping too. And we just both glorified God at what He'd done.
Right.
Well, that weekend, just a couple of days before Christmas, they went to a event at their homeschool park. At the homeschool group, and they said, well, we've got to go shopping for the young children. They said, what do you need? Who? They said, Helen, know the answer. And they said, do they have a need? And they started telling them, well, the whole support group went out shopping.
Mm.
And when they showed up at our house right before Christmas Eve, they filled up our living room. And it was such a testimony to our family that was there.
Mm-hmm.
And on Christmas morning, as we opened gifts, and our children would open a gift, and listen, folks, God is amazing. They got the things they'd been dreaming for, and no one knew. And they would open it up, and I would say, who's that one from so I can keep records so we can write thank you notes? And they'd say, it's from Jesus.
And this one's from the Lord.
It was just incredible.
It was tremendous.
And, you know, sometimes when we really can't do anymore,
mm-hmm.
the Lord steps in, and He does what we cannot.
It's almost as if He allows us to get to that point to say, I wanted you to see it and make no mistake about it.
Because that's really what Christmas is about, that the Lord is doing what we cannot.
Yes.
We can't save ourselves,
no.
But Jesus can.
And that is truly the gift of God and not the result of anything we earned or deserved. Well, look, we appreciate you being with us, and thank you for your attention and for your support here. And we do want to encourage you, come on over to our website. We have got some really neat gift ideas out there. What's the URL for that?
Okay, it's at raisingrealmen.com/Christmas shop.
Mm-hmm.
And you've just got to come and see all the cool things we've got. Hero Tales 4 is being released.
Mm-hmm.
Pollyanna, our new audiobook, which is
hilarious
and lots of fun and will teach your children to be grateful.
That's right.
And our new book. And lots more things you've never seen on our site.
That's right.
So head out there, check it out, because you know what? When you spend time and money at our site, it keeps us going. It keeps this kind of thing happening.
That's right. And it's good stuff. We wouldn't sell it to you if it weren't. So
it's what we use ourselves. Thank you so much, and Merry Christmas, folks.
Yes, very much so. Thank you so much. This is Hal Young.
And Melanie Young. Mm-hmm. And we'll see you next week, folks.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye now.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HALANDMELANIE.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.